doing is really interesting. And I guess part of what you're able to do is you have a methodology that allows you to infer behavior from data.
Yes.
So you're figuring out, you're kind of reading what it means by what's collected, first of all.
Yes. And I will simplify that for, because we are also going to be doing this. This is also part of podcast. So I'll just simplify. This is the Badal framework. This is a 5-step framework. The first, and it's an acronym that stands for these 5 steps.
This is another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. My guest today is Pia Jain. I probably already said your name wrong, but she's the author of Behind Every Good Decision. She's the CEO of A Ring, and she is a data scientist. So Pia, thanks for joining me.
No, thanks for having me.
How bad did I butcher your name?
No, I think Pia is a great short name for my full name, which is Piyanka Jain.
I contracted, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no worries. I think it works. It works fine. I'm all about brevity, just like you, so.
Yeah, in my head it got shorter.
No worries.
So we connected on LinkedIn, and you're a data scientist and mm-hmm. author through Forbes, and your book, of course, one of your books is Behind Every Good Decision. What sort of work do you do for people that are out there?
So we have two body of work. One is for our corporate clients, and we do data science consulting. So we are all data scientists in Aring, and we call ourselves SWOT data scientists, which means we can do data science projects faster because we are hypothesis driven. We use a framework called Badal, which is open source, which is also discussed in this book. So we are faster and we are quick ROI. So typically, if people think about data science projects, machine learning, whatever else, they think about, oh, it's a long 3, 4, 5, 6 months. For us, it's like 9 weeks because we are fast and we are hypothesis driven. And for us, it's also about practical data science. So we are all about what can we do with your current data set, with your current business constraint. So that's one body of our work. We do data science consulting. The other body of work, which is really exciting, is data culture work, where we go into large, mature organizations. We assess their data culture quotient, which is typically around 5, which is 50% in their journey. 5 out of 10, sorry. So 50% in their journey. And by the time we leave, it's about close to 80%.
Okay.
Right. And so we have a curated process. And again, that is also powered by the Badal framework, because that's the framework we use to organize the organization around, and also to teach people the skills in data science. So that's our two things which we do for corporate clients. And for individuals, we have a data science academy where anybody can come in and become a citizen analyst or a data scientist. Again, learning the Badal framework in the context of their business problem.
So the businesses that you work with, I mean, all businesses have data typically on things like customers, interaction with customers, mm-hmm. And then potential customers, right?
Yeah, prospects.
Mm-hmm. Right, leads, yeah. Prospects.
Yeah.
Where do you typically get involved, or is it all of it?
All of it. I mean, if you think of, and you probably talk about this as well, and you talk about it in your book as well, it's a funnel, right? You start, anything is a funnel. You start from the prospect, from the top part. And then for example, if you look at a marketer, a CMO who's heading up, they're thinking about three things. How can I acquire users in the most cost-effective manner? Which means, how can I drive more traffic on the top of the funnel? How can I have them trial my product? And then how do I convert them, more and more of them? So if you can see that funnel, you are basically saying more inflow, more acquiring of more prospects, having more of them try my product, so percentage trialer, and more of them convert, percentage conversion. So that's your acquisition funnel. Then the next point is, now I've acquired them, how do I make sure that I can retain them? So it's a retention strategy. And again, retention is all about how your user is using your product and how you can make that connection thicker. How can you engage them better? How can you have multi-use approach and so on? So that's retention. And again, you're using data for that. And the third part of this whole diagram is upselling, right? How do I get more value? Today, the customer that I acquire, their customer lifetime value is $5 a month, for example. How do I make that from $5 to $6 to $5 to $10? So that's about upselling. All of these aspects in marketing would require you to, use data. Then if it's a B2B company, the marketing then actually most of the time leads for marketing matures the leads into a sales funnel. And there too, you have to understand what kind of activities you're doing within marketing, which leads to better sales outcomes. So it's a marketing mix model, or within your sales organization, you're saying, how do I prioritize my sales, sales, for example, pipeline, to understand what actions I need to take, which prospect, so that towards closing. And that's called sales funnel optimization. And all of that, all of it in entirety needs data. Some can use simpler analytics, sometimes aggregate analysis or correlation analysis is sufficient. Sometimes you would use more advanced complex modeling, but all of this requires data for optimization.
So what you're doing is really interesting. And I guess part of what you're able to do is you have a methodology that allows you to infer behavior from data.
Yes. Yes.
So you're figuring out, you're kind of reading what it means by what's collected, first of all.
Yes. And I will simplify that because we are also going to be doing this is also part of podcast. So I'll just simplify. This is the Badar framework. This is a 5-step framework. The first, and it's an acronym that stands for these 5 steps. B stands for business question. A stands for analysis plan. This is the stage where we are actually framing what are you trying to learn from your data? What is your question? And how do you propose to go about solving it? That means you're thinking about the hypotheses. What are your hypotheses? Why, for example, let's say you're talking about acquisition and you're improving acquisition. Where is the current acquisition coming from? Which customer set is more monetizable versus not? Which one has higher value versus not? These are the ways in which you're going to frame your business question. The third step is data collection, which means don't boil the ocean. Don't tell me, oh, give me the entire dump of your database and I'm going to start analyzing it. That's not useful because you can't set sail in the Pacific Ocean and go look for that precious treasure, right? Because you have to be hypothesis driven. You have to be like, what are you looking for and where are you most likely to find that? So you are using the business question analysis plan stage to frame out your data collection, what kind of data you need. Once you have the data, you follow a recipe-based approach of deriving insights, which means, for example, let's say you need to use correlation analysis, then you know what is your driving metric that you're looking for and what are the other driver metrics that you're looking for the relationship with, right? And there's a systematic way. Again, it's discussed in the book. It's discussed on many of our white papers. If you are interested, you can download those recipes. You follow the recipe for getting insights. Once you get the insights, then it's basically coming to the recommendation and action stage. Now you're ready to implement those insights. That is the short form for the Badar framework. That's what we all of us data scientists use. And then we have, for example, marketers, and we teach them how do you become a citizen analyst. We use the same framework. If you have a small business owner, entrepreneur, they also use the same framework. When we have executives, we're doing a whole boardroom training. Again, we're doing it in the same. They're getting to their own level, they're understanding how to use the Badar framework.
So the data culture is really where you're going in first off, and you're trying to figure out how do they view data and how do they treat it and what are they doing with it, and then trying to shape that forward so that they can form these experiments or hypotheses to make decisions on. That's pretty much what you're trying to do, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's two parts to it. When we do data science consulting, we expect that they have a problem which is framed. For example, they may say, hey, our customer satisfaction is really, really going down. What should we do? What activities, actions we can take to improve our customer satisfaction? Or, how do we improve the ROI of our marketing spend, right? We every month we spend $100,000. Or $1 million, and how should we spend that $1 million that we get the most out of it? Right. So that's our defined problem. We use Badar framework and we solve it. We get to insights and we give them insights, and they can action on it and move their customer satisfaction, improve their fraud detection, improve their marketing ROI, and so on. Cool. The other part that we do, which is data culture, improving the data culture. There we start with an assessment of the data culture, and the data culture has 4 parts to it. How mature is your data? So data maturity is the first D of data culture. Second is now you have a single source of truth. You have mature data. You have access to mature data. Are your people able to do something with the data? Do they have the data literacy? They're
just sitting there in a silo.
Yeah. And also mindset, right? Do they know what to do with data? I mean, all of us have access to data, but do we know what to do with it to the appropriate level? So that's the data literacy. The third part of it is our data-driven leadership. Is the leadership in the right place to hold their team accountable, to hold their budgeting in the right way, to have a vision for their organization in a data-driven way, and so on? And then the fourth D for the data culture is decision-making process. Is there a process in which the decisions are being made where data can be inserted? So when we go into the organization, these four Ds then translates into 30 dimensions that we then first assess. And once we have done the very detailed assessment of the data culture, typically, as I shared with you, data culture quotient comes to about 5 out of 10, so 50%. We then have a systematic way of where the reds were, where the oranges were. And we have a way of addressing those reds and oranges while we bolster the greens in the heat map. And what we try to do is we translate the top metrics of the organization to top projects, have the champions work on those top projects while they get upskilled. So we are developing data literacy, we're developing decision-making process, we're developing their leadership towards moving the data culture quotient while we solve for the biggest problem. So the problem is, hey, our profits are down, we have a shrinking customer base, whatever those problems are, we're solving that while we move the data culture quotient of the organization. So that's like it's an empowered state for an organization to be able to self-sustain in future. So those are the two things we do.
So like, how important is this? Like, why does this matter?
Why does data science matter?
I mean, I'm just playing devil's advocate.
No, I understand. But is that the question? Why should somebody care about data science?
For people listening, like, I guess there's two audiences, right? One is if I'm a large company, I'm collecting a lot of data, but it's rotting. And it doesn't even sometimes talk across departments.
Like, yeah, there's not a single source of truth. Yeah.
What is it, what's the issue with not doing anything with it or not doing
it? Yeah.
Smaller, like, am I just stuck because I don't have enough data?
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, perfect data is a misnomer. I recently walked into and was talking to the head of Google search. And I walked in and the first thing he told me is like, Priyanka, perfect data. And I guffawed and almost fell down the floor. It's like, if you don't have perfect data, who has data, right? Okay. If the head of Google search is saying...
Google doesn't have perfect data?
Right. I mean, because the thinking is always thinking perfect data, right? Perfect data doesn't exist, right? So whatever data you have, the point is, are you monetizing your data? The question is, your question is, why should I care, right? Like, now, and again, you and I were talking prior to this recording with COVID outbreak and so on.
Right.
When we all come back from this, I don't know, 6 weeks, maybe 9 weeks, I don't know, maybe 2 months or 3 months.
We don't know.
And the new world will be not what we left behind. It's not like we can expect, what we left behind in February is what is going to be in Bay Area or Toronto or wherever we are.
Yeah.
Life is going to be very different when we come back. And the most notable thing for all of us would be, we would be expected to do more with less. There'll be people who have unfortunately lost their job.
Yep.
There'll be there'll be like basically a lot of stuff to be done. That means we have to get smarter in choosing what we are doing. That means we need to understand why we are doing what. And how else can you understand why you're doing what if not data? Right? And this kind of, luxuries we had about margins and inefficient transactions and claims and whatever luxuries we had prior to this breakout, come April, May, June, July, those margins are eaten up.
Interesting.
And so you would be expected, whether you're a marketer or you're a product person or you are running your own small business, you would be expected to do more with less. How else are you going to do it if you're not going to use the data to inform what projects you should be doing, what decisions you should be taking, what would be more meaningful changes to your product to improve, improve engagement? If you don't use data, how would you know that? You can't keep doing hit and trial and say, right, oh, this worked and this doesn't. You just can't afford that anymore.
So yeah, and you kind of hit on the head. Like, so I talk about, obviously building digital products, And the risk in building digital products is you build something that people don't want, right? So there's like this chicken and egg thing around, well, show me what you got and I'll tell you if I'll buy it, right? So
yeah,
people go on. So you're saying you've given a framework to us basically on the podcast, for example, and it exists, I think, in your book, because what you're saying is behind every good decision is good data, or at least an analysis of data, right?
Yes, yes.
So it can potentially inform me, should I be building this?
Yes.
Or be building it?
Yeah, I mean, think about this, like to your point, like when you're talking about, when there's an interesting story about how we came up with this name, Behind Every Good Decision, in the book itself.
Okay.
So when we started writing, and initially we were working with one of the key brand names there, book publisher, and they came up with the name Handbook of for Business Analytics, something like that. We looked at that name and we were like, wow, you cannot get. And of course, they were trying to get the meta tag, right? Business analytics and so on. But it was really the most boring name I could have come up with.
I was going to say.
Yeah, like seriously, Handbook.
We already talked about publishers, so they need to get some data on their own, maybe.
Well, but you know, the thing is, we couldn't have, because they, you know, like in book publishing world, the publishers hold a higher hand, especially for a first-time publisher. This was getting published in 2014.
Right.
This was my first book. And so when we heard that, we're like, okay, we'll need to get smarter than this. So what we did was we used a tool called PickFru. We first crowdsourced a lot of options for names from our community, from our Facebook community, from our LinkedIn community. A lot of people contributed. And then we did a series of A-B testing using this tool called PickFru, where we showed two names, A-B, and we asked them, which would you choose? And so you can imagine A-B, A-B, A-B. We did a whole bunch of A-B. The first four, the four or five name had Handbook of Business Analytics as well as Behind Every Good Decision. And finally, we came down to 2-2-2. You can imagine it's like if you think about you said your daughter plays softball, so they have the league matches, right? So they have two teams, you know. So finally, it comes down to semifinals and then it's finals, right? And in the finals, Behind Every Good Decision won with other whatever the second option was. I think the second option was maximizing profit, minimizing spend or something like that. But Handbook for Business Analytics was like fourth or fifth.
Right.
The data was overwhelming. It was like 10x for Behind Every Good Decision than anything else. So we sent them this experiment. We sent them the data and we said, the name we propose is Behind Every Good Decision. And of course, the publishers had to agree. If we didn't have data, if we didn't run the experiment, who would have won?
You're going by gut, right? You're just making stuff up.
Yeah. And what would be the name of this book be? Handbook of Business Analytics, which I don't know. But anyways, the point being, data is your tool. You want to have data in your toolkit. We could have meaningful conversation. And we've had, I mean, I have countless stories of when I was within the corporate world, I was heading up business analytics for PayPal, North America. And the kind of conversations we would have, we would say, hey, this $1 million that we're going to spend in next quarter should be focused on top buyers versus peanut butter over all our buyers because of this, you know. And we would, because you would have data and you would have a pretty solidly analyzed, you like the expected ROI is much higher if you do it this way versus that. Who can argue with that? And then lo and behold, if you do it that way, you also see the results coming out that way and you win credibility. So there almost is not much choice if you don't, you know, if you don't use data, you're running by gut and sheer luck. And then you're waiting and hoping and praying, okay, let me try this and hopefully it'll work. Let me try that and hopefully it'll work.
You're
afford that?
Shooting in the dark. And it seems, I think what you're saying makes sense. Like we've seen, I would say over the last 10 years where marketing automation platforms, all these different SaaS platforms, they've come out really to automate things. But part of that is you're collecting data and information, right? And so
absolutely.
It's almost like the end result, like we mentioned, we're in the middle of a global pandemic.
Yes.
It's a weird time to be talking about all this stuff, but it makes sense, right? It's like...
Yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, and thank God you and us, we are all remote working team and many organizations are going remote. But the point is now more and more things will be digital.
How else would you know
how are things working if you don't? Digital implies data. And how would you figure out? For example, us, we use MailChimp for a lot of our marketing automation. if we just went by our theory, hey, when somebody downloads this white paper, we will send them this and this. But if we don't look at the data, how do we know this is working or not? What's the engagement? What's the click-through rate? What are people doing after this? Hey, actually, it turns out that the first email they read, it's like has 3% unsubscribe rate. Oops. Now we know we're doing something wrong because the average is about 1% or 1.5%, whatever, you know?
Yeah, so if you but don't you're saying it, again, like, and that's kind of the point I was kind of driving at. So you hit it on the head. Like we've had these automation tools that collect data.
Yeah.
Now we've had this shock to the system, which is the worldwide coronavirus. And the businesses that are most impacted are those with physical locations.
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be more of this attention upon, okay, well, how do I insulate myself if this happens again? Because it probably will.
Yeah.
The answer is I should be able to work at home and I need tools because I don't necessarily have people that I can rely on.
Yeah.
And then what you're saying makes sense, which is, okay, we know we've had these tools for a while. Now it's like, well, which tool should I use? And then when I have the tool, the information it's collecting should inform my decisions.
Yeah. How are the customers using my product? I can have all sorts of ideas about, hey, you know, if I'm a gaming company, I can have an idea about, oh, I want my customers to be first downloading here, then activating it, and then going into this flow, and then playing, and then adding, topping up their dollars. But is that how it's working? And you look at the data, you're like, okay, what? They're not even using this flow. They actually, 80% of the people are playing this part, and you know, 2% of the people are actually putting in money. When you start looking at the data, you can only manage what you can measure. If you don't measure, how do you know what is really going on and how you can optimize it?
So I think what we're anticipating and projecting is, for example, after this which is going to be a very deep mess that's got to be dug out of.
Yeah.
The things that will probably, where money will probably flow, is to decision-making processes or tools that allow people to actually do something with the data, not just collect it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the collecting is the first part of it. Data maturity
is needed. Which we've been doing.
Yeah, collecting and making it easily accessible. That's first part. That's called data maturity. But then, what do you do with it?
Right.
You have to. How do you put it to work? And again, I want to stress, I mean, for people who are just starting out in this journey, or people who are more mature, Fortune 1000 organization, and so on. Whatever data you have at hand, can you monetize it? And you can. If you use the Bhadiv framework, if you equip your marketers and your product managers and your frontline call center people, if you equip them with the right framework, they should be able to leverage the data and say, hey, this customer has called me back. The first time they called me was for this reason. This reason is really highly correlated to, inversely correlated, for example, to customer satisfaction. When customer calls for this reason, they are inversely correlated to this, you know, my satisfaction. So I'm not driving. So this that means it's not driving resolution. And what should I do about it? If you equip people with the right sort of skills, again, Bhadiv is one such framework. You are free to adopt. It's an open source. It's there in the book. If you are able to use that framework and equip everybody with that, your decisions, micro decisions, all throughout the organizations can be optimized. And then you can cascade those decision making to all the way to the top of the organization, where you can be an efficient decision maker and data driven, right?
Well, so I mean, I think it's great. First of all, I was interested to learn that you have not only a methodology that you use when you go into an organization, but then not only assess the data culture, but then anybody can go through this academy type program that you've got, right?
Yes.
So just
absolutely. So if they want, they're interested in learning, they can go to Aring, academy.aring.com. If you go to Aring.com, A-R-Y-N-G, Aring.com, and Academy, you can find really applied courses. For us, it's all about practical data science. So we don't teach really statistics. We say, if you have a marketing problem, how do you solve it? If you have, if you're trying to improve your response rate, if you're trying to improve your customer satisfaction, if you want to improve a better outcome for your hospital, a discharge outcome, whatever it is, whatever problem you have, how do you do it? And that's what our focus is, solving problem using data.
I love it. Okay. And what you're saying, and you don't have to be a data scientist to do this. You can get a level of education enough to apply it to whatever you're your function is.
Yeah, I mean, so there is in the book also talk about 20-80 rule, 20%, 80% rule. Most of the problem that we most of us experience, 80% of that problem can be solved using simpler analytics, which means you can do that in Excel or Google Sheets using simpler methodologies, which you and I, everybody can learn. Aggregate analysis, correlation analysis, trend and analysis, as well as sizing and estimation. These are the four methodologies, again, discussed in the book, that anybody can learn and can use. Now, for 20% of the problem, which needs more advanced stuff, predictive analytics, machine learning, perhaps deep learning, perhaps AI. For that, you have data scientists. And even Fortune 100, even Fortune 500, Fortune 1000, they don't have enough data scientists. We'll never have enough data scientists if all the small and big problems were being dependent on them. Right? It's just not possible. So an organization is functional data driven when every individual is able to solve for that 80% and individual decision maker, and the rest of them, they know how to work with the data scientist, and the data scientists know how to use a recipe-based approach to solve the rest of the 20% problem. And that is usually the balance that happens. If you're a small business as an organization, you can think of yourself as a citizen analyst. We call them citizen analysts. And you should be able to solve that by yourself. A simple, like, oh, you know, why are we getting so much returns? What are the top products that are getting returns? What's my inventory? Where are we out of stock more? Where do we have the longest time to fill? All of those things you should be able to answer by yourself if you use a framework like this and the data you have access to. And perfect data doesn't, by the way, exist. Don't let the data gaps you have right now stop you from starting to do analysis, because perfect data really doesn't exist. We are all in that continuum. And the more you do analysis, more you will sort of identify the gaps and say, oh, you know, these are the three things we have not instrumented. We have not instrumented this form. We haven't instrumented this this logging. We need to do that in order for me to be able to answer this question. Now you have reasons to instrument that. Instead of saying, give me all the data. Right. All the data cannot be instrumented, but the top ones can be.
One sec. I just got to step away. One sec. Sorry. I'll edit this part out. Yes,
no worries.
Sorry about that.
No worries.
So I think the mantra of all of this, if we sum it up, is regardless of whether you're a small or a large company, the new reality is going to be, don't just collect data, do something with it and make sure that it's informing your decisions. And it doesn't have to be perfect to get there.
Yeah, no, it's a journey. And you know, start where you're at and you will continue to evolve and peel the onion of your business.
I love it. Okay. This has been really interesting, but I want to be conscious of your time. So first thing I'm going to ask you is, well, what's the data telling you about the coronavirus?
You know, I think if more people could see the impact one person can have in terms of spreading it, I think more people will do social distancing and actually adhere to, we have in Bay Area, California here, we have a shelter in place. But I went yesterday, I think I shared with you, I went to get my groceries after 1 week of staying indoors. And what I saw just didn't feel like people understand the impact each individual has. And I think a lot of people are thinking about, I'm not afraid of virus. I'll show up there. But the problem is this, like you moving around so much can have, you know, you can impact 10,000 people. You can, in fact, if potentially you have it, you can potentially impact 10,000 people or more. that data, if people see that simulation, people see, I'm posting it wherever I can, people see, people can really understand the impact. It's not about you individual being not afraid of virus. It's about your impact to the entire ecosystem that you're part of. So I think that's one part. The other thing is I want to mention that I think Kaggle has put up an entire huge data set of, I believe, thousands of articles and research on COVID, and especially COVID and this set of coronavirus, and they have made it available for data scientists and AI specialists to go in and do NLP and potentially get answers from. So that's out there for people who are, I personally don't have any epidemiologist on my team, but if there are any epidemiologists who wanted to work on that project and want our data scientists to help you, feel free to reach out with that. We are all about hypothesis driven, so we don't delve into data and start analyzing. That's just not our approach. But if there are epidemiologists who are ready to work with us, we'll be happy to contribute and things. So,
okay, that's a good offer, actually. I'm sure they would chomp at the bit. You might be very busy all of a sudden.
Yeah, that'll be great. We want to solve this problem.
Yeah, no kidding. Because I think it doesn't, no matter what we do now, it doesn't really go away with this, right?
No.
It's still a longer term problem.
Yeah. Like,
as we've seen, this is not the first coronavirus to...
No, there was SARS 15 years ago.
Right. Well, that's like crazy. Like, I remember I'm guilty of probably making fun of people going crazy in the beginning, but there might be some validity to the way people were behaving. So
yeah, especially the toilet papers. I think, you know, I think we want people to do social distance, but we don't want them to hoard. I think they're two different things.
You're getting it wrong.
Okay,
if you are the sum of the five people that you spend the most time with, who are you spending the most time with?
Can you repeat? Sorry.
There's a saying that you are the sum of the five people that you spend the most time with.
Yeah.
Who are you spending the most time with?
I am. I personally spend a lot of time by myself. So that means I distance myself. I need space in my rack. And I also find a lot of resonance with a lot of world leaders and spiritual leaders, those who are promoting peace and those who are promoting self-reflection. And so I love listening in and tuning into Dalai Lama. I hear him talk. He makes so much resonance for what he's sort of sharing. I'm a big fan of Bill Gates and the things that he is doing, the foundation. And it was no surprise that he stepped down right in the middle of this outbreak. I think he and his entire team probably are up to some really good stuff. I'm also really inspired by amazing, world-class leaders, Sundar Pichai, and there are many, many, many leaders here around in Valley. I follow them. I love the calmness of Sundar Pichai amongst the craziness of a lot of leaders. I love his way of, he's known for an empathy leader, and I love that aspect of him, which he brings. It's a very true leadership. He leads from behind. And I love that aspect of, you don't have to be cutthroat and greedy and like, oh, we gotta do this. Like, it's a very human way of leading and human way. And the culture that we are building also with Airing is about, it's a saying, and all of my teammate can tell you, I basically, whenever we have team meetings before that, they have to, before that, the unsaid rule is, if you have not meditated, you're not going to show up.
Oh, interesting.
In the team meeting.
How many meditators are coming to the surface in times of stress, and how many people that are in these, like, people that you would look up to and not realize, they're like, listen, meditation's the key too. I mean, even, okay, I'll use one example, which is, and he's a data-driven guy, is Ray Dalio, right?
Yeah.
He's been very open about how he uses, I think he's using transcendental meditation as his method, but he's like, listen, this is a big tool that I use to accomplish crazy things.
Yeah, I mean, for people who are interested, and I mean, there's not, for us, this is not, the coronavirus is not the reason we are meditating. I have been meditating and using meditation and using some ways of finding presence and awareness to our bigger self. What we see ourselves as is not what we are. We are mind, body, and we are also professional and personal and spiritual. We are sum total of all of that. And for me and for my team, hopefully, meditation is like breakfast. Like you don't go, you start your day with a breakfast, you start with your day with meditation, because that helps you think clearly. And so that you can be true to yourself and you can speak the words, you can speak less and do more. And that sort of is our approach. And so I'm hoping this wakes up people under you know, this kind of condition to sort of really center back down and saying, what is this about? Where am I now? What is my truth? And there are many tools out there for folks who may not know. There is a couple of apps. Insight Timer is the one I used, but there's also Mindspace, the big one. You can actually download those apps right now today. And there's lots of options. There's music, there's guided, there's, you know, there's just a timer. Do something and you'll find greater resonance and truth in these times for sure. But hopefully that tool becomes your own.
Have you used Muse?
I haven't.
Which is the headband, the brain sensing headband?
No, I haven't.
Oh yeah, check out Muse because it's kind of interesting. Yeah. Although this morning I was having a moment where I'm like, I don't want to give you my meditation data to the internet anymore, but it's basically it's a brain sensing headband and it tells you your level of calm or consciousness and gives you cues.
Yeah. Well, in that sense, I'm also a hiker. I spend a lot of time outdoors and a lot of times I go by myself, but sometimes I'm going with my friends and a lot of those folks are measures. So they'll have like, oh, elevation gain and heart, blood pressure and so on. And unless I'm leading a lead, sometimes I do lead hikes of 30 people, 40 people, and then I'm all prepared, my maps out and all that. If I'm not leading, I'm not measuring at all. It's interesting for me.
Interesting. Okay.
For me to be like so data-driven, for me, the wilderness, I don't record, I don't care if I did 5 miles, 10 miles, 9.2 miles, how much elevation. For me, it's the presence that experience brings. So it's interesting for how data driven I am in the business.
There's a tool you can measure your meditation with.
I don't measure my meditation because how I feel after that is a reflection of, you know, what it is. And it's okay wherever it was. Maybe I was not that centered today and maybe I was very centered today. Doesn't matter. The point being, I made an effort to center myself, to be able to plug into my whole self, because my whole self has much wider sense set of toolkits than my small mind, right? And I want to plug into that. Why do I want to operate from just a smaller set of tool? I want a big set of toolkits. So
that's
what I choose to use for people who are interested. Follow
great,
that path.
Great feedback for people, especially in stressful times. Like if you're not trying this, this needs to be a habit. So I'm glad you brought that up. Okay, I'm going to wrap up with a couple of things. One is, how are you, Priyanka, changing the world?
How am I changing the world? I really believe, as we were just talking about, I really believe in holistic, whole person approach and individuals, people's happiness, spreading the happiness in the world. And for me, data is this unbiased way, objective way of looking at the world and perhaps learning from it. For me, I'm a big lifetime learner. I'm always learning. And so for me, that connection comes in from, can I use data as a way to learn about my surrounding and then to improve? So if I am working on, can I improve? Can I build delightful products? Because now I understand how my customer is interacting with my data, right? And so my contribution to this world is empowering the world with the know-how of how do you use data around you to solve problems, to solve world problems, to make world a better place for yourself and others.
I love it. What's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
LinkedIn is great. And also you can follow me on Twitter. My handle is Analytics Queen. And then, by the way, it does sound so pompous. It was put in like Twitter, when Twitter came out, everybody was making handles. I did not know what that was. It's like, it sounded so funny and silly. I just gave myself a name that got picked up. And I'm like, lo and behold, I'm an analytics queen. So,
all right, analytics queen. When we have interesting guests on the podcast, we'd like you to nominate someone that you know that would also be an interesting guest. So who would you, Priyanka, like to nominate as a future guest of Automate and Grow?
I would love to hear from some of the marketers and CMOs that I follow. I actually love the leadership that ThoughtSpot has. And so perhaps, depending on who's available, Sudish or whoever, Cindy, I would love to hear from them. How they are using data science, how they are contributing to this world, and others. And we can talk offline as well, Michael. I have a lot of recommendations for folks that you can potentially...
And you work with HubSpot, right? Like you were mentioning that. So they're...
HubSpot, yes. HubSpot is another... The leadership there as well is interesting.
Or maybe I misheard you. Who are you nominating?
HubSpot.
Oh.
HubSpot.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's a tool, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I have HubSpot on the brain, but...
Yeah.
Okay, great. That's super. All right, so we will follow up with you offline. Priyanka, thank you so much. I really appreciate your insight and the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure talking to you, Michael.
Anytime. This has been another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. We will see you on a future episode of Automate and Grow.